Russia supplies arms to the legitimate government of Syria in full compliance with the norms of international law. We are not breaching anything. We have the common goal and the common desire to provide conditions for the settlement of that conflict. I can agree with the Prime Minister that it should be done as soon as possible.
That's Putin, or a version of him anyway, the Russian leader letting loose on the U.S. He defends arming the Syrian government and says we didn't break an accord, and he's super, super amped up about the United States deciding to send arms to the rebels. In a meeting with David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, he let loose on the idea that why would you even consider doing that when these are savages who eat people's organs? And that's where we begin. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney, America Tonight. Hope you had a fabulous Father's Day weekend, had a chance to spend time thinking of your dad or being with your father or the father figures in your life at some point over the weekend, if nothing else, at least by phone, Skype, or some other method. But I think a lot of people had a wonderful weekend. I saw a lot of people out with kids and a lot of Father's Day celebrations. So bravo for everybody partaking in that. So, so important. All right, speaking of partaking, it really is looming large. Talk of Syria will be part of this G8 meeting. Because now of the escalating civil war there and the fact that you have the United States saying, okay, the line has been crossed, we're going to go for it, we're going to give arms to the rebels. And then a video that pops up seriously of one of the rebels cutting the heart out of somebody that they killed who was part of the Assad regime and eating the heart, or taking a bite out of the heart like it was an apple. It's really freaky, freaky stuff, I have to say. But the U.S. is going to try to push other countries towards supporting, I guess, what they're doing. It would seem the other allies anyway. And you can tell that this is going to be the major tug of war over what's going to happen here with Syria, the transition to try to end whatever the conflict is. And the Syria's most important ally and arms provider is Russia, ding, 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 for $100. And now we're on the other side of that, and here these meetings are going on. Isn't that interesting? But of all times for that to happen, this is probably the best time, because face-to-face is better than any other way. And I think there's going to be some fallout, perhaps, from this, not just with the Russians, but perhaps with a few other groups, too, as well. And what's interesting is, in the middle of this NSA leaker, Edward Snowden story that's been huge in England but all over the world, but that's where the story was broke in a paper called The Guardian. This is where all of that is happening in London. And a report comes out that England spied on the G20 delegates. So the leaker gave that evidence, and a British paper reported it while all of this is going on, saying that they monitor the phones of foreign politicians during the economic summit that was there, that was held there. So the timing on that is pretty interesting, too, I think, as well as this is breaking out. So the targets included British allies like Turkey and South Africa. The Guardian cited some documents provided by Snowden, the computer analyst who's spilling secrets of the U.S. NSA, rather, intelligence agency. And this was just published right on the eve of another economic summit hosted by the British government and that important gang or group of eight of the economic summit in Northern Ireland. So isn't that interesting, the timing of that coming up? And he said they got round-the-clock summaries of calls that were being made, and the GCH headquarters set up internet cafes for delegates in hopes of intercepting emails and capturing keystrokes. And one briefing slide explained that would they would give intelligence agencies the ability to read delegates' emails before, as they do, providing intelligence options against them even after the conference had finished. So the idea was anybody who went to the summit, they were able to capture their information and follow the dots wherever they led them. Interesting stuff, isn't it? All right, speaking of England, David Cameron, the Prime Minister, his two cents on Syria, finding some common ground and working on some specifics to try to work it out, especially with Russia.
We can overcome these differences if we recognize that we share some fundamental aims: to end the conflict, to stop Syria breaking apart, to let the Syrian people choose who governs them, and to take the fight to the extremists and defeat them. We agreed that the G8 must back the work of Secretary Lavrov and Secretary Kerry to bring Syrians into a new peace process. And we will use the opportunity of having G8 leaders together to try to build on this common ground.
Wow. So all this is happening while you have Iran and the presidency, what's happening there in Iran, moderate winning the presidency, and a lot of people poo-pooing what the results were there. In Istanbul, the cops stormed a park, and there was another night of chaos there, and you think, wow, Turkey, how did this Turkey, what happened in Turkey, expand to such violent reaction, and how much unrest they're having there? I mean, you know, so much for the Arab Spring, how about the Arab unrest across the board? And in Iran, the cleric Hassan Rouhani won a commanding, they say, 50% of the vote, a little over 50% of the vote, in a six-way race, according to some of the results that were released, avoiding a runoff in the race to replace the departing president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, whose tenure is, you know, we know, is defined with saying nasty barbs like the Holocaust never existed, Israel should be wiped off the map, that the United States deserve what they got with 9/11, with what happened in 9/11. So Rouhani's campaign is triggering what some people are saying, that, hey, the votes, were the votes really counted now, or was there more stuffing of the ballot boxes, that kind of stuff. So he's supposedly seen as a moderate, but he's not going to break with the nuclear policies because he's very much in line with that, so there's not going to be a big difference. And is the people are questioning whether the election means there's reform and the middle class is voting, and now there's going to be somebody who's moderate, somebody who's more pro-Western world. But people in the know diplomatically say, don't be fooled by what's happened here. And will the election pressure Khamenei, who is the Ayatollah Khamenei, who is under pressure to allow some of these new changes, or will he still continue to take the hard line approach that he takes? Because ultimately, he is the supreme leader. He's the one who calls the shots. All right, stay with us. Much more to come, including the weekly America Tonight re-rack. You're going to love our interviews with Nasser Sasaban and also David Gartenstein coming up around the bend. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment to moment basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play the
music. Feels fantastic. I mean, I committed myself to the process this week. I committed myself to sort of putting a strategy in place that I hope would work the next sort of 5 to 10 years and deliver major championships. And almost to sort of strike upon that feeling and first week out, in a sense, first time I tried and tested it, to come out with the silverware feels absolutely amazing.
All right, that's the voice of someone who doesn't care about what's happening, at least on this day. Politically speaking, Justin Rose was all about the course, Marion in Philadelphia, as he won our U.S. Open, the Englishman beating out Phil Mickelson, who certainly would be one of the odds-on favorites. Five times Mickelson has come in second, and once again he is edged out and comes in second, the American, who is so popular, lefty, Justin Rose, nice guy. He hit the shot of his life on the 18th with a one-shot lead at the Open, a hole that nobody birdied in the last 2 days. He gently stroked an iron past the hole that missed the cup by inches. Then he two-putted for par. He had an even 70 that was enough to win the championship by two strokes. Mickelson battling hard, Father's Day, his birthday, five times a runner-up, didn't want to be a runner-up again. He had an eagle from the rough on number 10. It was vintage Mickelson. He's one of those risky players who isn't afraid to take a gigantic leap. But then he had two double bogeys, and that really sunk his chances in the end. His putter really let him down. So you heard Rose there, very, very excited. And he says he got a lot of encouragement from friends on the tour. And he just played all day, just looking at long par putts, just trying to do whatever he could, not trying to make as many mistakes. And it paid off in the end, a huge win from his first major. He sat and watched on the tube what was happening with Mickelson because he was already in the clubhouse, and he ended up winning this. There was a really, would have been a miracle putt for Mickelson to have actually tied him at the end. He would have had a birdie, and then they would have gone to a playoff, but that didn't happen again. That would have had to be a miracle putt. Matt, you were watching this. It was once again one of those finishes for Phil Mickelson where he just doesn't close out the deal. He comes up with an amazing shot, and he's like a roller coaster ride really all day long.
Yeah, and I think with Tiger being so far out of it, it was still a pretty good finish because you had, you know, about four guys on that whole back nine that were kind of jockeying for position. You had Phil who would go into a lead, then lose it, and then be trying to get it back. Justin Rose was in there. You had Jason Day kind of hanging around. So I think all in all, it was a pretty good final day, and it was a decent tournament, but not having, you know, McIlroy, Adam Scott, Tiger Woods there, that was the big three everyone was talking about kind of going into it, and it kind of hurt it a little bit.
Yeah, and Tiger Woods, with one of his worst ever recorded scores, 13 over. 13 over. He was brutal for him that tournament. In an Open, that was his worst, and the worst day he had altogether. I mean, combined scores, he finished plus 13, Tiger Woods. Woo! So he was never in it. You know, a few years ago, I had lunch with an NBC executive, and you'll love this. Here's a little inside baseball for you. And I remember him telling me, because he was running the sports division, that they told him, hey, no matter what happens with Tiger Woods, this is before the controversy with the women and stuff, it's all about Tiger Woods. So we got to mention him. You got to show him on the course. Even if he's doing lousy, people want to know about him. He's the drawing card. He's the ratings getter. So he's got to be heavily featured. You know, no matter what, if he's doing terribly or if he's doing phenomenally, he's part of the story because he is golf. He's the Michael Jordan of golf. And he really stunk it up in Marion. He struggled really the whole time. How about this? The Spurs beating the Heat in Game 5. They have a 3-2 lead in the finals, which is good because then they switched to Miami that series. The final score, 114-104. Somebody who has been almost invisible in the playoffs against the Heat, Manu Ginobili, who a lot of people were writing off as, ah, he can't have anything land, he's not contributing. He broke out of a massive slump. He had 24 points and 10 assists. It was actually his first start. And for what's happening here in the postseason, because he really had been that awful. And he was a big factor in that victory. Tony Parker was too. He had 26 points. And Tim Duncan, who's 37, he's one of the leaders on that team. Probably, maybe he doesn't retire for the season, but if they won, it would seem poetic that he would go out on a trophy. So Tim Duncan had 17 points and 12 boards. But Ginobili was the story. He had his highest scoring game of the season. And the Spurs became the first team to shoot 60% in a finals game in 4 years. Anybody who's played just even a little bit of hoop, you know, if you're saying 60%, you're doing pretty good. The kid that I like, or the guy that I like, is Danny Green. And he set the record for three-pointers. He hit six more, and he scored 24 points. I mean, he has been a Trey machine. He's hitting unbelievable baskets on the court. And if you're a Hoops fan and you're watching this, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not a Hoops fan, let me just tell you, there's some interesting basketball. When it comes to the finals, it really picks up. And if you watch, especially you jump in at the second half, right at halftime, if you don't want to watch the whole game, it's pretty exciting stuff, actually, to tune in right about then. For me, I'm a hockey person. I grew up in a hockey family. My brother played hockey, and we went to lots of Flyers games, and my uncle played hockey, so we were always involved in hockey. In the Stanley Cup Finals, it's been interesting because you had that triple overtime game that Chicago won in Chicago. It was crazy, and they were playing hard the whole time. It wasn't just, oh, we're skating. No, they were playing hard. Both teams were. And that was an amazing finish. And they had the best ratings for NHL Stanley Cup Finals in 16 years, over 6 million people watching. And then on Saturday, the Bruins even the series in an overtime win over Chicago. And that was an equally entertaining game, I have to say. And so far, this series has been pretty fun to watch, and now they're dead even game three Monday night in Boston. Hey, you've been watching this, Matt. This is good hockey. I mean, even if you were just kind of sort of interested in hockey, this would be a good series to jump in on because I think you've really seen some sharp play, and it's been exciting to watch.
Yeah, they're two very deep teams,
yeah.
Very talented teams. They each got stars, and then it's been really good games. You got a triple overtime and then an overtime game, two original six teams, really passionate fan bases. It's been really it's probably been one of the better Stanley Cup finals, you know, so far, the beginning, than it's been in a couple of years. So, I don't know. I'm intrigued. I know it's kind of a regional thing. There's not a ton of people that watch hockey all over the country, but check it out. Give it a little whirl, and you might enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think if you just even watch it a little bit, if you were gonna tune in, this would be the time to watch. Is when they're vying for, just like they are in Hoop, to be the champions, and you're seeing some good, as I call it, stick and puck. It's been fun for me to watch to see what's happening there. Give me a little sports shorts at the top. All right, here's something all of you can relate to, because I think you get a big kick out of it. But what's happening in the NFL is crazy. They're talking about now you have to have these clear, see-through bags to take them into the stadiums. Hey, Rex in Illinois, what's happening?
How are you doing, my dear?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I need to ask you a question with your sports expertise.
Go ahead.
Who's going to win this finals in the B-ball game?
Wow, you know what? Most people would tell you the Heat will, but I'm going to say the Spurs are going to pull it out. I think they win it. I hope they do.
Thank you. And I don't watch much hockey, but I would advise anybody out there in the world that likes any sport, go to a hockey game. The speed on that ice is phenomenal, and you will not pick it up on a TV box.
Yeah, you know what? That's it, Rex. You have to go and see a game for yourself, and then you would enjoy it. You can appreciate, as you said, that's a perfect analogy or a perfect way to view it. You look at the speed, and it's exciting. When you're there, you see it, and you can pick it up. That's the problem. People who have never been exposed to hockey, haven't seen a game, even a college game, they don't like it. They don't get it because they see it through the tube, and it just doesn't show up. Remember even Fox had those glow pucks that you could see to try to get people to understand what was happening there. But well said, you got to go see it live. I don't know either on that one. I'll tell you what, I'm pulling for Chicago, I think, for the Stanley Cup. I think they'll win it. Stay with us.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
In the last 2 years alone, the U.S. has seen huge losses to our food supply. In 2011, storms and floods raged across the U.S., costing us $20 billion in lost crops alone. In 2012, we saw the largest drought in the country in more than 50 years. You may think out of sight, out of mind, and so you don't think you will be affected. The fact is, you are. We all are. Food shortages drive prices up for everyone. You might not be able to control Mother Nature, but you can control your food prices by freezing the cost and availability of your food supply with eFoods Direct. Be prepared before you need it with nutrient-dense food you can store for up to 25 years. You can hope for the best, but hope won't feed you. Do what I've done and get your own supply of the best storable foods out there from eFoods Direct. Call 800-409-5633 or visit them on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex and check out their spring specials. Again, that number is 800-409-5633 or on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. You can bet your life on eFoods Direct.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
It's time to prepare for an uncertain future at the Midwest Self-Reliance Festival. June 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Val Air Ballroom in Des Moines. Tickets are only $6 per day or $12 for a 3-day pass. Speakers include Jackie Clay of Backwoods Home Magazine, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy of Doom and Bloom, and Jack Spearco of the Survival Podcast. There's 100 free conceal and handgun classes each day, and you'll gain valuable knowledge as you learn how to prepare with beekeeping, soap making, canning supplies, cooking with solar, gold and silver, seed banks, and water purification. There's even a free apple seed shoot for the kids. Check out the Youngevity booth and the health product line with pharmacist Keith Abel, speaking about natural healthy living. The Midwest Self-Reliance Festival, June 28th, 29th, and 30th in Des Moines, Iowa. Presented by My Patriot Supply and sponsored by Genesis Communications Network. Visit valairballroom.com for tickets and find us on Facebook at the Midwest Self-Reliance Festival.
Taliban suicide bomber hit outside Afghanistan's Supreme Court, killed 17 people, one of the deadliest attacks in Kabul in over a year and a half by my clock. It's the second consecutive day of these attacks in the capital city. So it's, of course, undermining what's happening with the Afghan forces to keep security without help from NATO troops. And we know what's happening. 2014, of course, the big pullout. Just a quick detail, the attacker rammed his SUV into buses carrying court employees at the end of the day, and all of the dead were civilians, including women and kids. At least 39 people were also wounded. Boy, oh boy. The Taliban said this was their blow to cruel judges who obey Western powers and warned of more bombings to come. Our next guest here on the show, or our first one up actually, Nazir Shanshab, has some interesting things to say. He was once Afghanistan's leading industrialist before he was forced out of his home country that he loved in 1975. He's lived in D.C., so he knows the politics there for a long time. He holds dual citizenship in U.S. and Afghanistan, and he's a leading media expert, rather, on Afghanistan. We're thrilled to have him. He also is the author of a great book, Silent Trees. It's cool. It's a novel set in Afghanistan, which he knows well, prior to the Soviet invasion. Nazir, thanks for popping on the show. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
So it's got to just tug at your heartstrings when you hear what I just talked about, that we had this yet another deadly attack when we're getting ready to pull out of Afghanistan. What do you think of when you hear stuff like the suicide bombers just upping the game again and the Taliban saying, expect more?
It's a tragedy, and what I fear is that it's going to be worse than it's not going to be better.
Yeah. What do you think the U.S. should do to try to stem some of this violence and this horrible instability we're still seeing in Afghanistan?
I'm afraid it might be a little bit late because we already have decided to leave Afghanistan after 2014. I'm not sure whether in the remaining time we have, we can change much of what has happened, and most of what has happened has been negative. Afghanistan is still the failed state it was in 2001 when U.S. forces invaded it. I think that that the opportunity to rebuild Afghanistan was squandered. The warlords are still in power. Institutions have not become strong enough to control the system. The rule of law has not been established. The country is mired in poverty, and it's a bad situation.
And as you said, you know, look what's happening with the big pullout, and that I mentioned also, obviously at the top. Do you think America should somehow retain the strongest military presence as possible in Afghanistan because of things that you just talked about?
I think we lost. We left Afghanistan once about 30 years ago, and had a bad experience, terrible experience in what happened. And I think if we do it again, we will have to go back probably into that region after maybe a decade and spend more of our blood and of our money to get it right again. I think it would be cheaper and probably the right thing to do to stay in Afghanistan at least for 2-3 years. Do it right. And be careful with what you are doing and what people you are working with, and then leave when the country is more pacified.
You described what it was like. There was poverty. The rebuilding in Afghanistan didn't work. It wasn't what you had hoped it would be. What other things have you personally observed when you've made a lot of these trips back to Afghanistan?
Total chaos, corruption, lawlessness, poverty, and hopelessness.
Mm.
And these are all things that do not augur well for the future of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I agree. Benghazi, obviously you know that. You're in Washington. It's still a huge topic because there's answers, frankly, in my opinion, we haven't gotten, and there's a lot of frustration there. What do you think happened in Benghazi as somebody who knows that territory really, really well? Do you think it was some sort of an inside job, and it was to mark the anniversary of the death of Osama bin Laden?
From what I have heard about it and read about it, I think it was a planned inside job. I think they chose the specific day of September 11, and with all the weapons they used and in the number of people they had on site, I think it was a planned job.
Yeah. You know, you left Afghanistan, I mentioned that a little bit at the beginning, and you sought asylum in the United States in 1980. What was that like for you? I mean, you had to, I would assume I'm speaking for you, but you had to, I'm sure, had a sigh of relief with a family and that kind of stuff. What was that like when you made that transition?
I was very happy for having been able to bring my children, my family to this country and give them stability in their lives, which is so important. It's unbelievable. Once you go through instability, you know how hard it is to live in that under those conditions. But it was a struggle. It was a struggle for survival. It was a struggle for trying to take care of the children. But it all happened well, and it all happened well because this is a perfect country to come and raise your family and educate your children. My children are all grown up. They are all successful people, and we are a happy family. And yeah, this is the gift that America gave us.
There you go. Love to hear that. One last one. We only have a minute or so, Nazir, but I said you were leading industrialists when you were in the country. You were a distributor for Toyota, Mercedes, Michelin, all that kind of stuff. So you were successful. It had to be disheartening to watch that all get pulled apart. Did it sort of almost seem as though it was overnight?
Well, in one sense, it was very, very hard. In another sense, I never looked back and never said, my God, why did it happen to me? I think if you go into that mode, then you don't try to make something out of your life. I didn't go back. I didn't look back. I just started to work and go forward. And perhaps I was one of the few very lucky ones that made it.
There you go. Nazir Shanshab, thanks so much for coming on the show. Pick up his book. What a good read, and really knows Afghanistan well. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you. And again, he's the author of Silent Trees. You can pick it up anywhere, and it's about Afghanistan. All right, it's interesting talking to Nazir and thinking about the situation in Afghanistan, and as I mentioned there to him, we're not too far away from the ultimate pullout of that country, which was always my biggest fear in this entire time where we had been in Afghanistan, the blood, sweat, tears that we have given to that country, and ultimately what we're seeing. And today was another sign of that, and the Taliban saying, listen, we're repelling Western ways, so if you want to fall into the trap, government, of following what the West is doing, then we'll show you and look for more retaliation. So they're threatening that they're going to bomb other places. They're going to bomb other places in Kabul and whatnot. Or, you know, they didn't give them a specific roadmap, but they said the Taliban was sure to jump on it and say, this is us, and we're telling you that we're going to make more moves on you if you continue to follow down this path. And, you know, you look at Nasir's background, and I mentioned it just a tad there, how he was even at one point a major contractor for road construction and maintenance and irrigation projects. He had a company called Sanshabab Services and didn't really have any competition there. But then once things started to change politically, and this is why we live in the greatest country on the face of the earth when you see what other people go through, then when things change politically, there were some trumped-up charges against him from what is now the now-deposed king, and before you knew it, he had to get out of the country ultimately, especially when things flipped with the Soviet invasion in 79 and what had happened when he tried to flee the country. He and his family actually went to Germany because they were hoping the situation would change. And, of course, it didn't and would allow him to go back to his home country. But because of the Soviet invasion and everything else, he instead came to the United States. You could tell how grateful he is to the United States, as he said. He got that political asylum in 1980. Think of how different times were in 1980. But he has that strong tie to Afghanistan, and he's gone back and been absolutely horrified by what he has seen in all these trips and what he's seen in the mountains of Afghanistan and some of the crazy poverty and chaos, as he was describing to us there, that continues on. So as we're getting ready to leave this country, as you wonder what condition are we leaving it in, and it's so sad because we knew this. We projected that callers, I'm saying, and myself, that this was easy to look at a crystal ball and say, listen, this is what's going to happen here. We are headed down this path, And it's too bad, because wouldn't it be great to leave, feel like it was a victory, feel like the Taliban didn't have the strongholds anymore? But unfortunately, that's not the case. And what happened today at the embassy, near the embassy, is just an indication of still how scary it is there. Stay with us.
You've seen them on Doomsday Preppers. You've seen them on network television, Shipping Wars, and the History Channel. Now, the strongest shelters money can buy are here. Atlas Survival Shelters. Made in America from 10-foot diameter galvanized corrugated pipe, up to 11 times stronger than square box shelters, and built to last up to 200 years. And you won't believe the amenities. Atlas shelters contain microwaves, refrigerators, big screen TVs, water tanks, septic systems, bulletproof hatches, and much more. Virtually everything you have at home, just buried 20 feet deep and bomb-proof. See the amazing Atlas Survival Shelters at atlassurvivalshelters.com or call 1-855-4-BUNKER. That's 855-4-B-U-N-K-E-R or atlassurvivalshelters.com. Financing now available. Atlas Survival Shelters. Better prepared than scared.
How's your pH today? Are you acidic? How alkaline is your blood and body? What is the pH of the water you drink? We are AlkaVision, and we have the answers. Drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining vibrant health and high energy, because bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. If your drinking water isn't at a pH level of 8 or higher, boost it with AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Our unique formula will alkalize your water, ridding your body of harmful toxins and acid, and help regain energy and health. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise the pH of your body to optimal levels. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com, spelled AlkaVision.com, or call 800-518-7615, 800-518-7615. Alkalize your body, supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
When you need it the most, will your generator, power equipment, or vehicle be ready? Gas and diesel fuels go bad quickly when stored, and more than half of generator failures during disasters occur as a result of expired fuel. PRI fuel stabilizers keep your fuel fresh for when you need it most. Nuclear power stations, emergency service providers, and ships at sea rely on PRI fuel stabilizers. And you can too. Call 888-776-9373 or visit PRIproducts.com to find the dealer nearest you.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. On Placing a Silver Dollar in a Book Explains Our Monetary System. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Very thrilled to welcome to the show David Gartenstein Ross. And boy, he has a lot to say. He is the director, Center for the Study of Terrorist Radicalization for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. I'll tell you, I read such an interesting piece that he put together. And let me tell you, he focuses his research on the challenges pretty much that are out there by violent non-state actors, and his studies go deep, deep, deep. So again, we are thrilled to have him on the show. David, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to join you.
All right, so I just want to get your initial reaction when you heard the story about Edward Snowden and all the information that was being culled and the stuff that started to spill out in the Guardian and the Washington Post.
Well, initial reaction is kind of a very narrow category. You have a number of things going on. You have Snowden himself. You have his flight to Hong Kong and his leaving Hong Kong for parts unknown, perhaps, and I think quite likely China. You have on top of that the information itself. On the one hand, a very broad order that the NSA got from the FISA Surveillance Court, which is looking into a vast number of phone records for Americans. Then you have two other pieces of information, one of which is the PRISM, which is a program for basically a surveillance program. And then what's called Boundless Informant, a very poorly named program, which is an analytic program that basically enables the government to take part in what most people would call data mining. So there's a lot going on there and a lot of different thoughts on all of them.
All right, so let's take the top one, because he's missing from Hong Kong, supposedly, as you say, probably on a flight to China. So is he going to get asylum in China?
Well, that's an excellent question. The Russian government offered him asylum, which, you know, all of which is very interesting, given that in the first place he is expressing libertarian concerns, justifiable ones, but then goes off to first Hong Kong, which isn't really a bastion of civil liberties, and then, you know, you're looking at both China and Russia as states that are very interested in him. You know, I'm not sure what China will do. It's possible they'd give him asylum. It's possible they would say that they simply can't find him, which would give them much freer rein to deal with him. I can tell you for a fact that the Chinese government is absolutely interested in getting all of the information that they can from Snowden. Absolutely interested in that. In that, you know, he's disclosed information publicly, but he also, knows how all these programs fit together. He also claims to have, snooped around into a lot of substantive material. I do question the extent to which he actually had access to snoop around. I think he's exaggerating his credentials. But all of that constitutes a great deal of information he has about U.S. intelligence programs, which would be of great value to the Chinese. The Chinese government is a fairly devious entity. I think that what I would be concerned about if I were him is not so much the Chinese giving me asylum, but China saying, yeah, we don't know where Snowden is, and meanwhile basically engaging in rendition, keeping him in fairly uncomfortable circumstances for a long period of time and trying to get all the information they can from him through both coercive means and also through providing him a great deal of carrots.
Oh, yeah. Talk about PRISM and just how vast this is and how come we didn't realize this was going on.
Well, PRISM actually is not the part of this that I would consider to be vast. I'd consider the part that's vast to be the FISA court order. The reason why I wouldn't consider PRISM, I do have concerns about PRISM in particular, but we just don't know how widely it's applied. What it is a tool that seemingly, based on reports that have been published, it seems to be a tool that is designed to allow the government to conduct surveillance across a number of platforms. That's something that's unsurprising. We know that the government conducts surveillance. There's no question about that. The question really is the scope of the surveillance. And if, it turns out that this surveillance is taking place in which they're looking at emails and chat logs and the like, according to properly produced warrants, then very few people would have a problem with that, because that's what the government does. It conducts surveillance upon bad actors after getting warrants. The thing that is more problematic from a perspective of surveillance being widespread is the court order that the government got against Verizon, which basically has Verizon give all of what they call the telephonic metadata to the government. What telephonic metadata is, it's not the content of telephone calls that are made, but rather it's the fact that a call is made from a location to another phone for a certain period of time. All that information is metadata that's created by the call, and you can learn a lot from metadata. This is why this immense basically this immense collection is problematic, even though it doesn't give rise to the content of communications. Even things like someone calling a suicide hotline or calling a phone number for alcohol treatment or drug treatment, all these things will come out in the metadata. And, you know, there's a lot there that can be embarrassing to people or give rise to blackmail. There's concerns not just to what the government is doing with it now, but the creation of a massive database that also has the potential to really have bad consequences if someone hacks into it or if a foreign government obtains access to it or the like.
There you go. Just a couple of minutes left. In your opinion, as a terrorism expert, does it work in this whole data mining deal here? Is any of this working to uncover would-be bad guys that want to harm us?
Well, I think the answer is yes with a but. And the except what I would say is I would caveat everything by not just is it working to some extent, but how well is it working and is it really necessary? I have no doubt that, you know, having a massive data set can be helpful in trying to track down terrorists and look at patterns. But it's not clear that there is any case in which this massive program of getting all these call logs was necessary to come up with the perpetrator. The case that's been floated publicly is a case involving an individual named Najib al-Azazi. But you know, his name had been given to the U.S. previously by an individual named Brian Milvinius, who'd gone to an al-Qaeda camp and had been captured. So, you know, the government could easily obtain a warrant to conduct surveillance against him. So I think that when you look at the questionable benefit to security, which I don't think is zero, but I don't think it's particularly high, especially when you look at the fact that there are other ways to go about it, then to me that really calls into question the significant privacy implications of this data being gathered.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. David, thanks for joining us. We look forward to talking to you in the future. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
For sure, this conversation is going to continue as to what happened with the NSA and how many secrets have been dropped out and what's going to happen with Snowden. Ultimately, we know there's going to be some charges here. I'd be stunned if there weren't. I think one of the biggest things that also comes out of this is this misinformation craziness of the contractors has to be a big concern. But, of course, why are they hiring contractors? And the answer is to save money. So they had an emergency, I'll call it an emergency meeting, and I'll call it an interesting meeting on Tuesday, a closed-door meeting with the national Senate leaders, with the National Security Agency chief, and talking about the story about Snowden leaking the details about the U.S. surveillance programs, right? And now they're calling for public hearings. So what kind of oversight have we not gotten? What kind of straight answers are we not getting ultimately? And to me, the thing that needs to be answered is, wow, how can you have federal government programs that are collecting information about millions, maybe even more, of phone calls and internet activities that are going on between Americans, and you have somebody like Snowden in charge of that, or being a piece of that anyway, and then dumping the information? Why isn't that somebody who has massive clearance? And like I said, the answer is because of the numbers, because of the fact that they're hiring contractors because it's cheaper. So it's cheaper to get contract labor. And are they getting this high-level security clearance? Because this is classified information. This is a policy problem here. How do you have somebody in that position that has his hands on the kind of information, that kind of intel? And, you know, are we going to declassify information on the NSA programs? Would that satisfy all of our curiosity? I think they got to blow up the PRISM program, don't you? I think they got to get rid of that sucker. All right, stay with us. We're jumping on the other side of the wall.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale, CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.